only 7 minutes behind schedule. It's Linux Voice, and we'll forgive them because these guys I've been listening to for probably longer than any other podcast, apart from some dreadful American ones that we won't mention. So it gives me immense pleasure to introduce everyone. And just imagine Brad Sucks. Yeah, I'm sure you all know the theme tune. So yeah, here we go. Linux Voice!
So welcome to series 4, episode, we think it's probably 12 of the...
Maybe
Linux.
13.
I think 12.
These are digressions.
So we don't have any... We don't have laminated notes.
This is a great way to make up that missing 7 minutes that we've squandered eating food. So I'm Andrew Gregory.
I'm Ben Everard.
I'm... What order is Mike in?
Graham. I'm Graham Morrison.
And that's Mike Saunders right there. Providing his usual blend of insight, wit, and...
Actually, he's closer to the microphone tonight.
So, we've got news, we've got a Voice of the Masters, discoveries, / finds, and also that other thing that we do.
No, not that other thing we do.
Okay, fine.
Should we ask Mike if there are any new ones?
Why not? Yeah, do it.
Are there any new ones? No. Mike has no neurons to share.
Subscribe to our magazine at shop.linuxvoice.com.
While you can.
And now it's time for lightning news. Lightning news.
Lightning news. One moment. First up in the lightning news this fortnight, the European Commission is to do a security audit on KeePass.
How dare they? Who are these European foreigners? People. No politics.
Well, this is the thing, right? The European Union is doing an audit on KeePass and Apache HTTPD, but we still get to use it. So.
Okay.
You know, yeah, without
benefits, so we don't pay out to them.
Exactly.
Excellent.
So this is part of the free and open source audit project, which was set up in 2014 with a €1 million budget.
How much? How much is that a week? What's that in real money?
Can anyone do maths here? How much is that a week? Since 2014.
£92 million a week.
It's some amount a week. So this is just a pilot project, and they put it out to the public to be nominated, and the public said we want KeePass and HTTPD. And some people, including the FSFE, have said that actually this is a complete nonsense. They're just producing a report that no one's going to read, and it's all,
bureaucracy.
Bureaucracy, that's...
Baseless bureaucracy.
Baseless.
Yeah. It's faceless bureaucracy from Brussels, basically.
Did we vote for it? No.
To quote Julia Reid, one of the MEPs that pushed for it, she said...
MEP?
MEP. She said she wants to make sure that the project results in real code contributions and does not end in hefty reports that no developer will read. And that was a couple of weeks ago, and they have pretty much said that they're going to end in a hefty report that no developer will ever read. So they're going to audit the projects, and they're going to, and that's pretty much it.
Given the context of this, Ben, who I think is one of the most wisest people I've ever met, what do you think of this? Is this a worthwhile endeavour or not?
It's fundamentally a good idea. However, like many fundamentally good ideas that goes to Brussels.
That's the wrong message.
Control.
Sorry,
over
what did you say, Mike?
Freedom.
Mike in Munich.
Should we move on to the next?
Somebody mentioned Brexit.
We mentioned it once. I think we got away with it.
So the Mozilla, who have nothing to do with the European Union, have awarded $585,000, not euros, to
not yet
to 9 open source projects. So this is part of Mozilla's open source support program, which was launched in...
Is that like the 9 Riders of the Apocalypse?
So this was launched in October 2015, and it's split between 3 tracks. The Mozilla Partners, which is projects that meaningfully support the Mozilla mission. And that includes Tails, that includes a Godot game engine, which is open source. It includes a Windows screen reader to help people who are visually impaired use the internet, basically. It includes a secure open source track, which is manual code audits for widely used free software. And it includes a foundational technology, which is software that Mozilla actually uses. And this is an ongoing program, so if anyone listening is part of an open source project, they think that one of those 3 tracks involves, they can get in touch with Mozilla and apply for money. And I think
they get any mentoring? Is there anything like that?
It probably.
Probably they can Google up stuff.
Probably.
This is a good thing. I trust Mozilla to do the right thing and to get things right. There's no ulterior motive with Mozilla. If Google were doing this, I would have, fears that they were harvesting news about our old people's homes and things.
Yeah, I kind of feel a little bit like Mozilla is that thing that everyone sort of slams on everything they do. You know, if they create a phone, everyone's like, "Oh, what are you doing creating a phone? That's a stupid thing to do." They've got a ridiculous quantity of money that they need to spend on basically making the internet better. And this is a fantastic way of doing it.
Mozilla has to find meaning. They had a ridiculous amount of money. They got it from Google. They no longer will have that income from Google. They have to find...
They got it from Yahoo. They if you've got a 30% share of the web browser...
This money doesn't represent what it is that Mozilla is trying to do. And I've said this before. How does... When Firefox and Phoenix that came before it came out of independent developers outside of the Mozilla kind of infrastructure, how does Mozilla catch on to the real meaning of what it's about? It's a rhetorical question. I don't mean to like direct it to you, but I worry sincerely because Mozilla is such an... We were talking about Google and data retention, and I think about things in this generation, the next generation, the generation following, and Mozilla is the best placed kind of... alternative for creating the infrastructure for the future.
But the infrastructure for the future isn't the same as the infrastructure of today. You can't just say, let's make today better. You have to experiment with different things and look at how, just throw a lot of different projects out there, and some of them will stick and some of them won't.
But 9 projects?
Then this is an entirely different thing to the sort of stuff that Mozilla actually invests in and does as part of a core Mozilla thing. These are just amounts of money that Mozilla are putting towards good causes, basically, in the open source world. This isn't the same as, the Mozilla phone that Mozilla itself did. This is things that they're sponsoring outside of their core mission. And
yeah. Do you think that's a good thing?
Yeah, I do think that's a good thing.
Okay. I trust Ben. I think it's an incredibly difficult problem. So somebody asked, what would they rather do with it? I don't know. I met Mitchell Baker, who was at the time was the CEO of Mozilla, and she was incredibly knowledgeable and wanted the right thing for the open internet and what Mozilla and Firefox was doing. But they lack the kind of insight, and I don't have it either, which I really wish they'd invest in trying to see what the threats to an open internet and that are going to face our children and our children's children. And I wish they'd kind of focus on that.
But the thing, if you look at what Google and what Apple and what Microsoft do, they don't focus on a single thing. They throw a huge net out there.
But Mozilla isn't like them.
Google and all that, they throw a huge net out there because they don't know what the future is going to be. They throw the huge net out there because they know that the future is going to fall somewhere in that area and they want to be the leader in that area. Mozilla have to do the same thing as well. They don't know where the open internet's going to go. They don't have some crystal ball they can look into. They have to think, it's going to go over there somewhere. Let's try and get involved in all that area, and hopefully by getting involved in all that, we can drive the way the open internet goes in 10 years' time. That's what I think, anyway.
Okay. No, you're right. It's lightning news.
Lightning news. Right. Next up on the lightning newser. This is great. Everyone always argues more with me than a usual podcast.
It's the beer. I'm usually sober.
I'm not.
We know you're not.
Germany launches a prototype fund to pay people to develop free and open source software. So this is basically a chunk of money that's available to German residents, which isn't the same as citizens. So if
potentially Mike, then.
So yeah, basically the voice there over there.
What do you think, Mike? The microphone doesn't pick up the bubbles.
So any individual German resident can apply to develop code under a free and open source license, and they give very basic instructions under what a free and open source license means. I looked on the website and basically said if your code's in GitHub, it's okay.
very brave of them.
Yeah. And it's up to 30,000 euros over 6 months. And it's only specifically it's for new features and new software. So you can't just get it to go, oh, I'm going to make Firefox or whatever a little bit better.
So you can't do documentation. You can't do bug fixes.
Nope.
You can't do the things that are actually needed.
Nope. You can't do security audits. You can't do anything like that. It's to develop new stuff. Right. So
brilliant.
From a sort of...
Thanks, Mike.
Yeah. From a sort of government perspective, I assume they're thinking about sort of developing new companies, people doing stuff that brings stuff into the economy, not just making stuff better. This is a little bit cynical in that view.
Making stuff better technically is part of the economy. I mean, I didn't finish my economics degree. Sorry, which I'm...
Is that what, Tyler, out there? Sorry, which part of the economy is making stuff better?
I didn't finish the degree. I don't know.
I don't know.
Wunderbar, yeah.
Wunderbar,
das ist,
yeah.
Das ist wahrscheinlich eine ausgezeichnete Idee. Sagt Mike.
ja. Und eins Weißbier.
Oh yeah, sorry, and it has to be with Weißbier? Who knows? But you have to develop new features, and if you want to do that under a FOSS license and you're in Germany, or you can move to Germany, then seems like a fantastic opportunity.
While you still can,
indeed. But to be fair, this probably ends before we leave the European Union. It's only for the next 6 months or
in
so.
In 2025.
Yeah.
Sorry, we're leaving the European Union? What is this that you speak of?
It's all right, you can just move to Germany, Graham, and it'll be fine.
Excellent.
So the final item of news...
52%.
Lightning news.
The final item of news. And let's be honest, not that much has happened in the open source software community over the last 3 weeks. So this is all a little bit tenuous.
But that's why it's so short.
That was because we were upstairs drinking until 7 minutes after we were supposed to start. The final item of news is that online ad agencies are using your battery status to track users. Boo, exactly. Who said that?
Was it Mark?
Boo, exactly, yes.
Mark says it's
weird. You told us about this over a year ago, Ben. I remember you mentioning it in the Tux Radar podcast.
To be honest, the cider rots my brain. I forget.
You did. You told us it was a threat ages ago.
It's a threat.
I've told other people, you know, trusting as I am in you.
It's been known to be a threat for a while. There's a HTML5 API that for your mobile battery level, basically. So when you access a website, your phone says, I've got whatever percentage of battery left to the web server. So they can deliver a low power version of the web page. Which does, of course, beg the question, why would you ever not want the low-power version of the web page? You know, it's basically just adverts sapping your power, so just send me the low-power version of the page. But anyway, researchers from Princeton have actually found advertisers that are using this API to track users across various websites. And even if you click that you don't want cookies and all that sort of stuff, that obviously you don't want tracking you.
Is this part of like the HTML standard that you push not only how much battery you've got left, but the rate that your battery is draining, much time is left?
Yeah.
We let that happen.
Why?
Don't ask me why. Ask you
why,
the
Ben.
IETF.
I don't know
why,
Ben. I don't know. It's like passing legislation in Parliament that requires 50% of the vote.
52.
50 would have been enough.
Like 8.
I don't know.
We don't do politics.
I don't know why. This seems like a terrible idea to me.
Sorry, what was that?
All of it. we're letting people track us because we tell them our battery levels, and apparently mobile phone browsers thought that was a good idea. And that's the end of the news.
Wow. Thanks, Ben. Yeah.
You can see that walking around.
That's it. That was a great big chunky Nokia, and the battery probably lasts for about a fortnight. Yeah.
It's time for Finds of the Fortnight.
It is fantastic. As is traditional, I have to unlock my phone. I asked... you always get it wrong. I asked the IRC channel. I was just stood back there. If anybody has...
Standing.
I said, hello. This is slightly crazy, but we're in London to record a podcast live at FossTalk.com in London. If anyone wants to share a non-political find, it would be awesome. Right, so we have Zed Moylan, a non-political find, bunnies are fluffy. James O, train spotting is fun. Did you know that? I found an oil tanker train yesterday using realtimetrains.co.uk. So that's what happens when you ask the IRC channel to find something with a non-political edge. Although I actually think trains are very political, considering the state.
Nationalise them.
Yeah. Considering we didn't pay so much for them back when they were nationalised and they ran on time.
Is this a Stalinist magic coming out?
Yes.
No spoilers, Ben. Come on.
So there was more discussion about trains. So fines. Does anyone have a find? We could ask the audience. Does anybody want to share a find with us that they have something awesome they've discovered? It doesn't matter if not. There's no pressure.
Can I just say that I found that if you find a free venue in London and tell people about it on the internet, you have a bloody good time doing it. But someone with a serious find, come on.
Thanks, Joe. You've done an amazing job.
You are still doing an amazing job.
Yeah.
I've got Qt browser, which works with Qt. It's a simple browser. It's fast, and it works with Vim shortcuts. It's amazing, but I might have read it in your magazine, so I'm not too sure if it's actually a find.
Yeah, that was one of my finds, and I think we highlighted it on the podcast that they were doing a crowdfunding campaign to get like proper updated WebKit support or whatever they were using. It's a really brilliant browser, actually. Qt browser, Qt browser.
Whatever.
Yeah, that's a great find. Thank you.
Cool. Hopefully I won't get a kicking from any front-end guys here, but Aurelia.
We're only joking.
Aurelia as an SPA framework, which kind of really keeps the ECMA script 6. So it's better than Angular or React, which is like a from, you know, it's very much their ecosystem to write front-ends in. So anyone who wants to write front-end web apps, have a look at Aurelia.
How did you find it?
Because I used Durandal, and the guy who wrote Durandal went to help with Angular 2 and decided he didn't want to stay with Google, so then wrote Aurelia.
This all sounds like I'm a bit in Lord of the Rings here. I have no idea what you just said.
That's because we're in the Gandalf the White phase.
If you want to share your files and make sure they don't accidentally disappear, ClusterFS is good. If you haven't tried it, it's really, really, really easy to set up as far as clustered file systems go. It is great. It's also got a block device exporter that works really well if you can't be asked to deal with Ceph.
Wow, this is actually really productive.
We should do this again.
Okay, thank you very much. I'm aware that we're probably running out of time. Traditionally, I look for a really esoteric audio thing. So I've got Spectmorph, which is... I haven't tried it. But it's a way of morphing one audio file into another audio file, but not just the contents of the sound. It actually does a proper abstraction of the actual, the specular contents of the sound, not just the binary set contents of the sound. So, for example, you could use it to merge, but...
Is this a software synth, Graham?
If it would be nice if it was real time, but you have to run it for like 20 minutes. But you could use it to merge between a very hard piano strike and a very soft piano strike without a piano.
So could you just medium tap a piano?
If you had a piano. Yeah. That's exactly what it does. But you could also choose a flute and a violin. Yeah. Yeah.
So if David Bowie came back to life and went back to Hansa Tone Studios
and
tried to record Heroes again, and you had that thing where there's the microphone here and there's a microphone 10 feet away and the microphone 50 feet away, you could do that in software. So we wouldn't need David Bowie to come back to life after all.
Well, it's the timbre of the sound that it changes. It's not so much the distance or the change in the audio characteristic as you move the microphone away. So you could choose completely... I've already talked too much about this.
So I've got some discoveries.
Hey. Some finds.
Finds, indeed.
Oh, I can't believe we still do.
After 3 years.
3 years.
It's awful.
Screw it, I've got some discoveries.
What have you found?
I've discovered that you can do a regex replace in LibreOffice Calc, which is actually really handy because I had some stupidly formatted LibreOffice spreadsheet with bracketed expressions where there shouldn't have been bracketed expressions, and so I need to get rid of all of those. Everything between the brackets goes, and I thought, well, I'll just save it as a comma separated file and run sed on it. And I thought, actually, no need to, just find and replace. You can do it. I think you have to click on advanced mode, and then there's a little box that says regular expressions. Does the job perfectly. And my second find, which also has nothing to do with audio as well, is that...
you think.
There's this thing called, I think it might be pronounced Boink, B-O-I-N-C, which you can use. I mean, it's used for things like SETI at home to run on your PC and all that sort of thing, but you can also use it on your phone, basically to share your phone's spare CPU cycles with any sort of...
Yeah. There's a real man over there.
Ubuntu phone.
Yeah. So basically, it's to share your spare CPU cycles with researchers who might need them for modelling the environment and that sort of thing, and all, you know, modelling disease stuff, and basically making the world a better place. And
why? Why fight it? Let them pull it down.
So yeah, it only runs on your phone when it's plugged into mains and it's fully charged and it's on Wi-Fi, and it just allows researchers doing good stuff to use your phone's CPU to sort of amalgamate all sorts of data into great stuff. And no one could possibly be cynical about that, could they, Graham? Go on, try and be cynical about that.
The word awesome was invented for that. Awesome.
Awesome.
Well done.
So it's awesome.
Thank you. Great.
Those are my finds.
I found the Atom code editor, which
Which, I mean, I didn't realise this, but we featured it in the magazine in issue 18, so that's quite a while ago. I only found it courtesy of Mr. John O'Bacon.
Who's that?
Who's
John O'what?
He does something to do with GitHub, something or other.
He's independent. He's independent.
Oh, right. So he's nothing to do with GitHub, who created the Atomic Code Editor.
So he's like Hannibal from the A-Team now. He's just a soldier of fortune.
But he marched elephants over the Alps.
Well, indeed. But
where are the Alps?
But the thing is, it's an editor. You can do Python. You do JavaScript, but also you can configure it using CSS. So you can, rather than just a predefined list of configuration options, you can, you know, choose your own color, which in my case it's usually just red or white because I'm not very good at CSS. So the best thing to do is just leave it as the defaults. but the fact is, you know, I am empowered.
As we all are.
So my second discovery is something I discovered just now, just down there in the bottom of that stairwell in the Harrison pub on Harrison Street in London, which is Marxist magic. On the 21st of September in this very room, there's going to be a night of socialist magic.
Another night.
So, socialist magic and entertainment with Ian Saville. And then there's some other words that are just a bit too fuzzy, so, you know. We'll just have to guess what socialist magic is about.
Is it where everyone's a winner?
So that sounds like our halfway reminder, given that we're now three quarters of the way through the podcast.
Non-political podcast.
Graham, could you put a little bit of Mike Saunders in that glass, please?
Every podcast this happens.
Amazing.
Sorry, Mike. The lasagna's ready now, Mike. You can go and get it.
So now it's time for that other thing that we do.
The voice of the masses. It's there.
Is it my turn?
Do you want me to read it?
No. Give me. New versus old. For all the technical advancements and faster processors, it seems like newer computers have lost a little of the spark that made the machines from our youth special. Our youth? Who's our?
I wrote that, question. So basically
what is
youth? Me.
Amigas, Commodores, BBCs, they seem more exciting. Right, so it's not just us. When we spoke with Eben Upton, we found he uses a BBC Micro because it boots really quickly, because he just does what he wants him to.
Is that when he's not using his Mac?
Quoth Eben, I've got a BBC Micro on my desk because I do word processing on my BBC Micro. I hit the button and it's on. I can even configure it, if I set the jumpers right, to boot into a word processor in 1 second. Obviously, we've gained a lot, but from a strict usability point of view, it's really surprising how much everything hasn't got any better. Now, that's crap grammar.
Is that what he said there?
To be fair, I edited it a bit.
Oh, you made it crap.
I made it less crap, but it was more crap to begin with.
So, old, ye oldie stuff.
Ye oldie stuff, yeah.
Have you got any ye old stuff that just works better than ye modern stuff? Because I don't think I have.
I don't anymore, but when I used to use my Acorn, that was
Which Acorn?
The 3000.
Until when did you
Acorn
use
3000?
This?
Yeah. So your parents were teachers?
Yeah, my mum's a teacher. Yeah, my mum's a teacher, or was a teacher.
Okay, well, I suppose you've got to help your kids up somehow.
I found an old computer in the garage running Windows 3.1, and from turning it on to getting into word processing was about maybe 1.5 seconds. Windows 3.1, okay? Sorry, did you guys hear that?
Don't
you
believe.
No, really, I swear to you, I swear. Yeah. It was not so much crap in it, that's the problem.
Yeah, but yeah, the A3000, you turned it on, it flicked up in maybe a couple of seconds. You had the little thing that maybe looked like a disc, but I'm not entirely sure that's what it was meant to look like. You clicked on that, you opened it up, and you had a word processor. You know, that was, you know, we can talk about how fast Linux boots and whatnot, but it was a hell of a lot quicker.
Oh.
Wow.
There's a hand up over this is the voice of the masses.
How blisteringly fast in words per minute do you type that you care about saving 5 seconds off a startup
exactly.
time? How many words is that?
It does write a magazine.
Yeah, several. Several words, that's how many.
If only we'd had a wireless mic.
So here's Mark.
So when I'm playing games on my Linux box...
Oh, you like games, do you?
With an SSD, I think
so
back
you
to
like
playing...
So you like Steam controller?
I think back to playing games on my Amiga, putting in 3 floppy disks, waiting while it says decrunching, whatever the hell that means, for half an hour.
Yeah. That was eventually the game scene. If you had actually bought the game...
No, this was decrunched. This was Amiga format cover discs.
Yeah, the rare scene.
Yeah, that's we can blame Nick Veitch for that. Nothing to do with us.
But I honestly can't remember a game on the Amiga loading faster than my games do now off an SSD when they were read off a floppy disk.
But compare that to the cartridge, what's it? They were pretty fast.
Okay, games loaded pretty fast off cartridges, but... compared to the games we've got now, a lot of those games were pretty rubbish.
Oh!
A lot of those games. Yes, there were some classics, but you can play them today a lot quicker than you could. With a Steam controller.
Gaming doesn't sell, otherwise we'd discuss this more.
This is the problem with freedom of speech, isn't it? Really?
Just doesn't understand Mario Kart, does he?
Mike, tell us about Mario Kart.
You know what's funny to me is that basically what we've been talking about for the last few minutes is that you've tried all the new stuff and you like the old stuff better.
The new stuff is better than the old stuff.
They're
better.
Okay.
Modern systems can boot in under 10 seconds. Do you really care about 9 seconds from 1 second to 10 seconds?
Really not. And then once it's booted, how much better is it?
Exactly.
But is it better? I mean, my...
Yes. Yeah, it is.
Right.
It is. It's better.
Bear with me. Bear with me. My alarm clock has adverts on it. Think about that for a second.
You've got the wrong alarm clock. The best thing about old cars is that they don't make them anymore.
The thing is, it didn't used to be a thing. Alarm clocks didn't used to have adverts on them.
Cut it off and cover it with tar.
It's a witch.
Does anyone reckon old computers are better?
No.
Is there anyone? No. Anyone? Was that a...
Paddy does.
Paddy does. Does he? He's a silhouette, I can't tell. There's a socialist magic poster behind him, which throws him into stark relief. Tell us what you think, Paddy.
Socialist magic is wonderful.
We are in Islington, spiritual home of socialism.
We're not talking about politics.
Technically, we're in the borough of Camden.
Oh, thanks, Joe.
Close enough.
Well, there we go. I think you're wrong, basically.
I think it's a really important point that we all realise that technology has increased in capacity, like... phenomenally since that time, and yet we feel, and I feel a bit shy talking to the people that already know this, but the problem is with young people, things we've lost control. What I'm trying to say is that we had control over those old pieces of kit and it felt good, and we've lost that control, and that kind of direction that we're taking is only going to get worse over the next 50 years, which is all I'm really concerned about.
Someone should have had a discussion about this for 45 minutes earlier.
Oh, well, what time are we supposed to finish?
Whenever you want, man.
Are we fair?
I really don't know. What time are we supposed to...
Well, technically 3 minutes, but whatever.
For the benefits of the listeners...
Sorry, Joe, it's really
bad. Who weren't here in the room.
We're usually much better than this.
Linux Luddites discussed this very thing, and if you go to linuxluddites.com, you can hear all of the discussion on this, and it's great.
And how can we find a more professional version of this podcast?
Oh, if you buy the magazine. It's much more professional.
More professional?
Even I know, it's unbelievable, isn't it? So that's that's WH Smith's and Borders and all shops and that.
How
all
many pages?
100 or so.
I can't remember, actually.
And how many that don't have adverts?
Two
on?
Less.
All of them don't have adverts. We can't sell any adverts. It's all editorial content of the highest order, etc.
In an order.
Sales is rubbish, isn't it? I can't do it.
You need to be more American about it. Like, hey, yeah, we're great. We're the greatest magazine in the world. Yeah, buy us.
Well,
make Linux great again. Take back Linux from the faceless bureaucrats.
Set up a firewall and make Microsoft pay.
Well, we've still got about 2 minutes or so left. Is there anything anyone wants to ask us? You've been listening for a while, and any burning questions? Apparently not.
New stuff is better than old stuff. It's been conclusively answered.
There's a new question, so that must be better than the old questions.
I'll wait for the mic.
It's not a question, it's just that I saw Linux Voice on sale in Radio Shack in San Francisco, and I was really excited because it was like abroad.
Thanks, Laura, that's pretty cool.
That is awesome. Cheers, Laura.
Another.
Since your successful Kickstarter a couple of years ago, right, and getting to the point where you've launched a magazine and independent of any kind of overlord, how do you feel, guys?
The problem with being independent of any sort of overlord is you become your own sort of overlord. Which has its own sort of problems.
I feel tired.
That's the overlord at the moment.
That's how I feel. I feel like I'm late doing the VAT and the corporation tax. And I'm behind doing this issue. And I'm just... However, everything is awesome!
But on the plus side, we're leaving the European Union.
just shout, make Linux great again.
If we leave the European Union now, we won't need to pay VAT on our sales in Germany, Sweden, etc. So that will be of short-term benefit to us.
Yeah, 47.8% of me feels good about it.
Great, so... That's an awesome question, full of positivity. Thanks, everybody. You've been wonderful. Good night. Thanks, Mike.
I want to drop the mic now, but I'll put it in the stand. It's such a nice day.